All right, everybody, welcome back to BioBros episode 22. We're going right back to the native plant series because you guys seem to really like that one. And we liked it too. Like I said, we want to do like every state eventually. We want to do a bunch of different countries and things. We went with Alex's hometown last week or last episode. And this time we're coming to my hometown. We're doing Arizona, if you couldn't tell by the thumbnail and title. So I'm going to lead us off with a real interesting one. The plants I decided to choose for two of my three are ones you would not expect in Arizona. You hear Arizona and you think just dry desert, which is mostly true, but not all the way. So we're starting off hot with good one I'm about to butcher, Plantanthera sparsiflora, sorry about that one. That is the sparsely flowered bog orchid. So that one, you would not anticipate hearing a bog orchid in Arizona, but we do have them. Even though we're mostly dry, we still got some water. This is a smaller plant. It's about 1 or 2 feet tall, and it grows in wet areas, specifically for us in the seepage areas of the canyon walls, even more specifically within the Grand Canyon. So natural springs and whatnot come out of the Grand Canyon's walls, and they create these seepage areas that things like bog orchids actually like to live in. It's not the prettiest plant in the world, but it is pretty neat. Still an orchid. Orchids are incredibly interesting plants. I don't know a ton about them, but every time I learn stuff about them, I'm like, wow, that's weird and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a very interesting plant, and orchids really are just, like, so, I guess, interesting and unique because they just, there's so many. Like, I mean, even here, again, in North Carolina, we have so many native orchids that I didn't even realize. I was like, we have native orchids here? So it's just something that's, like, you don't expect, but it seems to be, like, every single state has native orchids, which I'm pretty sure every state does have some species of orchid that is native to it.
I wouldn't doubt it. There's like 2,000 something species described of orchids.
I think it's aren't crazy. Orchids the most described species of plant? Like they have the largest.
Yeah, they're definitely the largest grouping of plants are orchids. But yeah, this species is more associated with like California and Oregon, but we have them here as well. I have not got to see them. I was recently at the Grand Canyon, but I didn't make it down to a point that had one of these seepages, so I didn't get to see any plants like these. But still super cool. These are another interesting plant that's pollinated by moths. So we always think of things like butterflies and bees as pollinators, but we forget we got butterflies of the night, a good old moth that's around too. So that's why when you look at these flowers, they're not necessarily brightly colored, because moths are generally out at night, they don't see color. The color doesn't matter nearly as much. Still a neat little plant, you know. You wouldn't expect to hear a bog orchid native to Arizona.
Oh no, not at all.
All right, so Alex, what was your first one? Let's get into that one, because not a ton of information on these. They're not too crazy.
Yeah. So my first one, I'm gonna kind of keep the theme of like really you wouldn't expect it. At least I'll explain more when I get into it. But so my first one is going to be a Chilopus linearis, which I think I actually didn't butcher that too bad, I hope. It's also known as the desert willow. There's a bunch of other names, common names for it as well, but desert willows tends to be one of the most common names. And the reason I would say it's like one you're like not fully expecting is because a lot of times when people hear about willows, or like hear the name willow, they're like, oh, this is a plant that is going to want water, because everyone knows the warning about willow trees and not planting them near your pipes because they will grow down into your water pipes and destroy them. So not this one. This one actually won't. It is actually not a true willow species. It belongs to a different family of plants completely than true willows. And it actually is more considered a flowering tree, is more what it's like in the other families with. But it seems to inhabit the dry arid regions of the southeast. So other than Arizona, they're also native to Texas, New Mexico, California, and northern Mexico. They grow naturally along desert washes, riverbanks, and dry valleys. They like really well-drained soils, and they're moisture intermediate. So this is not one that like it wants to be baked. They are extremely heat and drought tolerant, but it's not a tree that would like prefer to constantly be in very dry or dry soil or baking soil. It's not a very large tree.
Yeah, people neglect a lot of the trees we have because they're not necessarily as impressive as a lot of the like true forests and stuff that other places in America have. But we actually have a lot of trees. They're just not, you know, 80 feet tall.
Yeah, these guys, says about the max height is about 30 feet.
Yeah, they're not massive trees by any means. All right, so those are two kind of quicker ones because there's really nothing too crazy about those. They're more than anything, their common name is what makes them interesting because you wouldn't associate it with the desert, but it's actually here. So this next one would be a fool to leave this off of the list. This is by far the most famous plant here and one of the most famous plants in the world. One of the most recognizable ones is the Carnegiea gigantea saguaro cactus. The technical pronunciation would, in like the native word, would be saguaro. You don't actually pronounce the G, but pretty much everybody pronounces the G. That one, not going to be too picky on that. So these guys are the big cactus with arms. If you tell somebody to draw a cactus, this is what they draw. If there's a cartoon character out in the desert and they find a cactus, it's this one. They get up to 50 feet tall. They're monstrous. When you see them in person, a huge one like that, it's a very impressive plant. And they actually don't develop those arms until they're about 70 to 100 years old. And some never develop the arms, but generally about 70 to 100 years, they'll get an arm. So think about how old that plant has to be when you see them with 10 arms on them. Right, they live to several hundred years. They're endemic to the Sonoran Desert, so mostly Arizona, some Mexico, and a tiny bit of California. But Arizona is where they're mostly associated with. I believe I would take the bet, I don't know this for sure, that we have the most out of anywhere. There's whole like forests of them. They're just everywhere. Same density you would see trees in, you see these cactus in. Super, super cool.
Yeah, they're such a cool species. And it's insane, like you said, how slow they grow and things like that. And I know you can get them as like little tiny plants here. And it's so funny to me because first off, we'll be old and or darn close to dead by the time it even would get one arm. And also on top of that, here to grow them actually well, you can't even plant them in like cactus soil. You have to plant them in like straight lava rock because it's too much moisture for them here.
Yeah, they're very interesting plants. They'll swell up. So our monsoon storms here, if you're not familiar with that, we have a monsoon season. And it just torrential downpours of rain for 40 minutes. And then they soak up all of that water and they just get fat. And you can tell when the storm was around because of how fat the cactus are. Because it'll absorb so much water and then it completely dries out because rocky and our soil's not good at absorbing water because it is so dry. But other interesting things about these cactus, too, is they're a keystone species here, and not only just for the animals, but for the native people to Arizona, way before the modern civilization got here. They have these big ribs through them to keep holding them up. Those get used. The fruit's actually pretty good. It's similar to a prickly pear. Have eaten it before. And all of the birds, bats, bugs, all of that use these because they're essentially the trees of a lot of areas here. We don't have large trees, but we do have large cactus. So they fill that same ecological niche. Cool little fun fact I have on these ones is the saguaro boot. Some species of birds will actually carve into the cactus and create nests within there, and that hole calluses over, and when the cactus dies or somebody cuts it down, which is illegal in Arizona, they're a protected species, don't go trying this one, you'll go to jail. They have this boot that you can use as a container, and it's fully waterproof. So it was a water bottle back in the day, like before we had real water bottles. If you could get a cactus boot, you could carry water with you.
See, I've seen other people not do that, but I've seen people use, like, I think it was a prickly pear, where they took, like, the pad and then opened it up and used it as, like, a water bottle.
Yeah, this is essentially just a better version of that.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. You'll see these cactus with all the holes in them, and you'll see birds or nests or remnants of things. Super, super, super cool. Like, we take them for granted a lot here, living here, how cool it is that we have plants like that. Because they're very impressive in person, when you see one in person, a real deal big one.
I think a lot of people with native plants tend to do that. It's just like, if it's something you see every day, a lot of people don't, like, fully appreciate the uniqueness and, like, insanity, or even, like, really how rare something could be because they see it every day.
Yeah, because it's not rare to me. They're actually quite common to me, right? Yeah. They're everywhere where I live, but anywhere else in the world, as far as on that global scale, incredibly rare plant.
Oh yeah.
So super, super cool. One more little note I'll have on these. We could talk about these all day just because they're super cool. They're so picky about where they live, hence why they're endemic to only one area of the whole world, is you can see the exact line where they can't grow anymore. When you start driving to different places, you see changes, right? Like, for some reason, there's an environmental change. You'll see all the cactus just stop. No more saguaro cactus at this point. And there won't be one farther. It's when you start driving up north, there's a road, and you drive up it, and there's one cactus, and it's the farthest one. And every time I'm like, how come you got away with it? Like, there's just one. And it's literally like 100 yards away from the rest of them, maybe. And that's it. That's the farthest one. And dude's been there for hundreds of years. For some reason, he's 100 yards tougher than all the other ones. And that's literally the cutoff right there.
In there by himself singing that song. I'm different. Yeah, I'm different.
But yeah, super cool. I have seen them in snow before, actually. They have.
Mm-hmm.
They're tougher than people give them credit for. But that's because they're in snow for 20 minutes and then it's all melted. But yeah, I have seen them in the snow. That's a really cool look.
Yeah, I think it wasn't last year when you got pictures of it.
No, it was a couple years ago, but I think
it's okay.
I think
so. I remember you sent it to the group.
Yeah, I've showed you the picture before. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could talk about these for a while. They're super, super cool plants.
They definitely are. So I'm going to get into my second one, which is also another endemic species, like the saguaro. And so this is Lee cannot talk tonight. Asclepias angustifolia, or the Arizona milkweed. Jeez. Really cannot speak tonight. The Arizona milkweed, which is endemic to only Arizona. It can be identified with by its thin stems and like very narrow leaves, which for milkweed is not a super common trait either. They'll have little tiny white flowers, and it'll obviously just on the top, just like all other milkweeds. They like to be near. What was it? Sorry, read that wrong. They're a small species though of milkweed compared to other milkweeds. They only get about 2, maybe 3 feet. So they're not, obviously, they're not like the smallest species or anything of milkweed, but they are on that smaller size. Their leaves tend to be about 1.5 to 4.75 inches long and 1/32 or to 1/2 or inch, or that would be about 2 to 11 millimeters wide. So they're tiny leaves and very long, but not very wide leaves. They are very drought tolerant milkweed, unlike a lot of the other ones too. They can survive on like less than a foot of water annually, which is crazy when you think about how little water that is. But they are another clumping species, just like say like the butterfly weeds, but I think probably one of the similar growing ones to them. But they're just a really cool very cool species. It's found in riparian woodlands, up in the mountains and in the canyons. So this is probably one you'd find a little bit more further north in Arizona. But they are also, again, host plant for the monarchs. So that, just like all the other milkweeds, the monarchs will lay their eggs on them and have their caterpillars raised up on them.
Yeah, a lot of the, like you're kind of getting at with the more compact plant and then the long, skinny leaves, that's a big recurring theme with a lot of the plants here. Does a lot better at preserving water. Also waxy coatings on leaves. That's very, very common here too. Just to help preserve all that water. They can't afford to lose any unnecessarily.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Essentially just a desert version of a regular milkweed, you know? Long, skinny leaves. Be real good at holding on to all the water you get. Again, that one wasn't... A lot of these plants that we went for on this one are ones that are different because everybody thinks cactus, and you're right. We have a lot of those. Definitely have a lot of cactus. But we also have a lot of other stuff, too. And this is one that I'm going to get into for my last one. This is... Another name I'm going to butcher, we picked some real good names this week, is Chilanthes yavapensis. Or this is a cloak or lip fern. People call these the yavapai lip fern. But this is a natural hybrid between Chilanthes lindhameri, sorry if I'm butchering that, and covelli. So it's a natural hybrid fern, but it does get its own little name in here. And this mainly grows in volcanic rock, and this is the largest and most diverse genus of xerophytic ferns. So xerophytic means without water, essentially. So it means that these plants are incredibly drought tolerant. They live in areas where there's not a lot of water, very, very dry. So you'll hear that xerophyte. Xeric, that just means dry, not a lot of water. And these are considered to be the most fern-like of those xerophytes. They look a lot like a fern that anybody would recognize from a distance. When you get close, you start to see that they have these kind of different shaped leaves on them. Like, they're a little weird. They have, like, They're hairy, kind of fuzzy. Very interesting. They're almost rolled up or wavy look to them. It's very weird, but super, super cool because it's a fern, which we typically associate with very wet areas, that lives in dry areas, but still looks like that. Very interesting, cool plant. Definitely wanted to throw one of our native ferns into here. And I chose the Yavapensis because of Yavapai, which is a county here, and a native people, so it kind of sticks to Arizona a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. When you sent me the list of the stuff you were having and this fern was on there, I was very surprised myself, just because, it's like you said, you wouldn't expect a plant that looks like a fern to be found in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, it's, we actually have a lot of ferns here. I put a link in our chat here. We should put it in the, we'll put it in the Discord for public so you guys can see it. And it has a ton of the desert ferns here on there. There's so many. I don't remember exactly how many they said are on here, but there's way more than you would ever think. And it's super, super cool. Like, we have lots of different ferns. Some of them aren't xeric necessarily. Like, there's some in that live alongside that bog orchid in the Grand Canyon, where we do have a lot of water. Just because we don't have a ton of water everywhere doesn't mean we don't have rivers and natural springs and stuff where plants that do like water can live. We still have that. But in general, a lot of our stuff is xeric, just like these ferns. There should be a picture. I haven't seen the thumbnail yet, but there should be a picture of this fern on the thumbnail. Take a look at it. Give the genus a quick Google search on there. And look at all of them. They're super, super cool because they really do just look like a normal fern you would think of until you get close and you can see it is tougher almost. It has a different feel to it where it's like, okay, this is like beaded, scaled almost. It's tough. It looks like it's meant to hold on to water and not let it go.
Yeah. So it won't be on the thumbnail itself, but there will be a picture throughout when we're talking about it. I'm going to try doing that this week and see how it works out. I know some people suggested that last week, or last episode when we were doing the natives, and possibly putting like pictures when we're talking about them so people can actually have a visual while we're doing it. And I'm going to try and do that this week. So,
all right, yeah, good call, guys. If you're mad at the editing, that's Alex that does that one. Direct all hey, that. Hey. Not me. It's not, none of it's on me. All right, so let's bring us into your last one here.
So my last one. Again, we said we were going to do different ones because we didn't want to do a bunch of cactus, but I did have to do at least one cactus. Can't go to the desert without doing at least one cactus. And yeah. So the one I'm going to do, and I'm probably going to butcher the last part of this, but it's Ferrero cactus Wislenzii? Maybe? Well, it's also known as the fish hook barrel cactus. It is a really cool, just like not super big cactus. It tends to be like your normal barrel cactus. It's only a height of about, well, actually it gets a lot taller than I thought it would. It's about 5 foot tall at its max, but it can also get 5 foot wide. So this is a very good sized cactus, but it's nothing in the heights of like the saguaros and other ones like that. But still, 5 foot tall and 5 foot wide is a pretty large and stout cactus. It's ribbed just like other, like a lot of other cacti. It has about 20 to 30 ribs on each plant. And during the monsoon season, the ribs will expand just like the saguaro cactus to store water. Which again, that's just such a cool thing, because like you really don't see that in a lot of other plants, but cacti just swelling up because there's a lot of water there is just insane to me. Excuse me. But they're mostly found in, like, the Sonora Desert area. They have very pretty, like, orange flowers. I mean, these flowers, and I'll, again, these pictures will be up here as I'm talking about here, too. But some of these flowers are just insane looking, the different colors and stuff. But it's orange is the main color, but, like, different shades of orange. It's just crazy. They're considered an evergreen cacti and apparently listed as salvage restricted under an Arizona native plant law. So I'm assuming that means, like, you can't mess with them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that means you just can't take them.
Okay, that's kind of what I figured. But
a lot of her, a lot of the slower growing stuff here, like, pretty much all cactus are like that. You can't just go out into the desert and pick them.
That makes sense, yeah. It, so it says another cool thing about them, a lot of places, or a lot of cacti you'll see in clumps or like groups of like multiple cacti together, obviously. That this species is actually tends to be a solitary one where it's like just the one by itself. And they prefer, again, well drained, sandy, gravelly soils and full sun. That cannot handle too much water. Because they will rot in a second. But very showy flowers in the summer is when they bloom. And they propagate from seed, which is another cool thing for them.
But yeah, I'll throw in a note on barrel cactus. A lot of them. So you know zip ties, right? A little plastic zip tie. You'd use to, whatever, tie anything together. Their spines feel exactly like those. You know how they have those little lines in them that, like, lock in the zip tie?
Yeah.
They're exactly like that. They're a zip tie that's really sharp on the top. And they even make the same noise. Like, you know, if you run your fingernail across the zip tie, it makes that little zip noise. You can do that to the barrel cactus, too.
Interesting.
It's a weird feeling. And they hurt so bad if you get stabbed by them.
Yeah, I believe it.
They have like these flat, like zip tie, like spines. And oh man, they're terrible.
Yeah, no, I'm good not finding out how that feels. I will say one thing. So I find this very interesting. But one of the ways they got their name, the fish barrel cactus, or the fishhook barrel cactus, was. According to this, it said the spines were actually used for hunting by heating them up and then bending them to make them into the shape of hooks for fishing. So basically, I guess they would take the spines on these cacti and they would heat them up slightly so that they could bend them enough to be in the shape of a hook to fish with. Hence the name fish hook cactus.
Yeah, they're very durable. Very mean spines. But not the worst ones, because they come out of you. Some of the cactus here have, like, really tiny hair-like spines, and they get stuck in you, and it's like fiberglass. Those are the worst, by far. And second worst, I'll give you guys a bonus plant. We're 30 minutes into the show, you get a bonus plant here. I don't have notes on it, so my info is not going to be perfect. But the jumping choya, jumping cactus...
Ow. I almost did that when I was trying to find it, but I found this one first.
Now, those are evil. Alright? Those are evil plants. They're the worst. They're worst ever. So they get their name because it feels like they attack you. But it's not true. They don't jump on you. But they have really, really long, thin spines. And they're so light. Like, they're like ping pong ball light. Even though they're bigger than that. So if you touch even just one of those spines, it moves the entire little piece of cactus right into your ankle, and they're covered in just needle sharp spines. So pulling them out is so hard, and they're just all barbed. It's a disaster. They're the worst.
I've seen so many videos of people trying to pull them out, getting them out, and then just for them to pull too hard, and then they get launched into a friend or into their hand or...
Yeah, yep, that's the story with them. And they grow, a lot of times, they'll grow in, like, patches. So there's just, like, tons of them, and they just litter all of these just death balls everywhere, all over the ground. So it's just, like, impenetrable. Like, you're not walking through that area. It's evil. They're just the worst.
Yeah, that does not sound like fun.
No. No, and they get you.
Oh, yeah, I believe it.
Ooh, man.
One last, like, interesting fact about the fish hook arrow cactus, though, that I just saw when I was looking at it, too. So, a lot of times when you think of cacti, a lot of things with, like, the wildlife uses would be, like, pollinators for the flowers and stuff, which this one also does, but also, like, wildlife using it as, like, shelter or using them when, like, the birds who, like, catch the lizards and stuff and skewer them on the spines and things like that. So that's what mainly people think of. But so the fishhook cactus are actually, during times of seasonal droughts, bighorn sheep eat them. Can't imagine that would feel great, but that's really cool to me. Bighorn sheep in general are very cool, and I know that they're not, like, super common, but up in the northern, like, in the mountainous areas of Arizona, I think they're more common. But the fact that they, during droughts, seek out these cacti because they're going to have more water in them and eat them and deal with all the spines and stuff just to get that cacti is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I know where a population of bighorn sheep is that's being tracked. Like, you can see a couple of them have the tracking collars on them. So they're part of some research. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can go see them at the lake. You just show up. It's pretty. I know when and where they go and stuff, so I get to see them. But it's pretty cool. But yeah, lots of things will eat the cactus. They're pretty good at getting around the spines and everything. The barrel cactus, they'll make a little fruit too, and all the little ground squirrels and stuff will try to pick that fruit out of there. But yeah, we got lots of cool stuff here. Really, we could make, like, tons of episodes on plants you would not expect in Arizona that are here. None of them, I don't want to say none of them, a lot of them are not anything crazy. North Carolina, those plants, they tended to have something more unique about them, the ones that we talked about. A lot of these ones are just like, huh, I didn't know they had that. Still very, very cool. I guess a lot of mine are carnivorous plants, and are carnivorous plants not, like, the most interesting? But yeah, these ferns are really cool. I like the ferns, the orchids. Obviously, we got to talk about some cactus. You can't talk about North American desert and not talk about cactus.
Yeah, no, of course not. And I will say, I think give Arizona less credit than it is due with, like, that kind of stuff. Because, yeah, North Carolina has some cool things and stuff, but the fact that y'all have such biodiversity, just like North Carolina, but, like, in completely different environments, is just so cool and interesting to me.
I mean, that's why we did each other's hometowns, because I feel like we both did the same thing. You know, I'm like, look how cool all these carnivorous plants are. And you're like, they, I guess. And then over here,
I see them all the time.
Yeah.
And now with the cacti, I'm like, those are so cool. And you're just like, I see those every single day.
I want to keep this series up, though. I really like it. Hopefully this episode does well, too. And we're just more encouraged to keep on going with it. Because I'd like to do that. California's crazy just because of where it's at in the world and the shape of the state. You go all the way from, like, hot desert to cold mountains and everything in between. So there's lots of really cool stuff in California. And then, like, some of the more northern areas, too, because I don't know a ton about them. So
yeah, and I can't wait to actually learn about them. If you have a state in mind that you would like us to do, let us know in the comments. Or don't feel free if you want to join the Discord and let us know in there. We would love to do other people's hometown states. I think when we do some of the other ones in the U.S. that our friends live in, we might have try and have them get on the show and go with us, because I think that'd be a cool idea.
Yeah, that would be. Because I do like that perspective of somebody who lives there, what they think is cool. And other countries, too. Don't be afraid of other countries.
Yeah.
We want to do showcase native plants and animals from the areas of the world, like everywhere.
Yeah, we want to show people.
We happen to be in the U.S., but it doesn't mean that everything has to revolve around America when we say the word native.
Yeah, because, I mean, whatever plants are naturally occurring in your area are native plants. And really the whole points of these episodes are to just show people the really cool species that are native to their states or their countries and things like that, and be able to educate them more so that they know more about these things and possibly can even do things like how I currently am doing. And I've been showing Shaw and all of our friends and stuff this stuff, but like landscaping with those native plants to help wildlife and help the ecosystems and things like that. And by teaching y'all about these different species that are native to these states and stuff that a lot of people don't realize, just getting it out there and getting more information out there so people can look in and go, you know, that would be really cool in my yard. And it's a native, and it would help wildlife and things like that by planting more of them.
Yeah, but all right, we'll call it a wrap on this one. Made it this far, comment. We want to know if you made it this far. Just let us know you made it this deep. And we'll hope to see you guys on the next one.
Yep. See you guys later. I think we're going to be switching to every other week. So there probably will not be an episode next week, but there will be one in the week after that. But we will see y'all later.